the music. Cut the music.
I think I got my swagger back.
Spectacular group of men. You go find them, you throw your arms around them, you give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl.
Oh, the band is out on the field. He's going to go into the end zone.
There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Like poison. Like rat poison.
Are you going to listen to me or are you going to listen to these guys?
And welcome to College Football Country. My name is Josh Parcell, the founder of College Football Country, cfbcountry.com. Check out the podcast, check out the website, the voice of college football fans anywhere and everywhere. Thank you guys again so much for listening. If you're listening to this, make sure you're downloading and subscribing the podcast. Find it on Apple, find it on Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play. It's literally anywhere and everywhere podcasts can be found. If it's not, tell me where you can't find it. We'll put it there. We'll let you find it. We'll let you listen. We don't discriminate. So make sure you guys are letting me know. And once again, the contest to name your favorite college football player in your review for the podcast, still going on. We got about 25 more to go. We're getting a few every single episode, trying to get closer and closer to that 150. Once I hit 150 reviews on Apple, as long as they're five-star reviews, I will give out a $25 Amazon gift card to the best comment, the best name left in the review. So getting on to the show today, we've got an awesome, awesome show for you guys. We're going to talk to Dabo Swinney. That is an interview that was recorded earlier on Wilson and Parcell, the show I co-host in the middays on WFNZ. Dabo Swinney joined us on Wednesday. Going to put that on the podcast for you guys. I know a lot of people listening to the podcast and the show here not able to catch the midday show. So going to let you guys check out Dabo Swinney. We'll talk to him for about 20 minutes about not only the NC State game this weekend, but also the legacy that he has left behind at Clemson. It is now 10 years since Dabo Swinney was named the head coach at Clemson, and just talked to him about the growth and development of the program and how it got from where it was in 2008 to now one of the top five programs in college football, maybe even one of the top three programs in college football if you really want to split hairs. So super excited to talk to Dabo. And you guys will get to check that interview out in just a few minutes. Also going to have Chris Felica from College Game Day on as well. The Bear makes his return to college football country. He'll give you some best bets for the weekend, talking about some big matchups in college football. But right now we start with Clemson and NC State. Believe it or not, the ACC is the only conference left in the Power 5 with more than one undefeated team, and it's these two, NC State and Clemson, the Wolfpack and the Tigers. If you remember the last two seasons, this matchup came down to a touchdown, okay? And in 2016, NC State had a chance to win the game in regulation in Death Valley, and a missed field goal cost them a chance at the upset. They end up losing in overtime by a touchdown, and had NC State won that game, Clemson probably out of the playoff. Of course, you don't really know. You can't play hypotheticals down the line. Would Clemson have still lost to Pittsburgh a few weeks later? Maybe not. But Clemson lost a game later in the season that year, was able to recover, still make the college football playoff, win the national championship in Deshaun Watson's final season. Had they lost that NC State game, that's two losses. I tend to think that had NC State won, I don't think Clemson would have sleptwalked through Pitt like they did. But nevertheless, NC State remembers that opportunity, that missed opportunity. And now you talk about what's at stake this weekend in this game. For NC State, this is a chance to prove themselves under Dave Doran, okay? Because Dave Doran has built this program from really an afterthought in the ACC to all of a sudden, I know they're undefeated, and I know the schedule's been pretty light, but they have a chance this weekend to mark themselves as one of the true contenders in the conference, not just this season, but moving forward. You talk about the landscape of the ACC right now. You talk about Virginia Tech building towards something, but still not quite figuring it out. You talk about Florida State, complete state of flux in the Atlantic Division. You talk about Miami, complete state of flux in the Coastal Division. Some of the traditional powers in the ACC are in a very weird spot right now. Louisville, way down right now in the Atlantic Division. Boston College is kind of creeping into the picture a little bit. They're trying to make their way into that conversation. Of course, they are nowhere close to Clemson, but if NC State can win this game, all of a sudden, you have to talk about the Wolfpack as maybe the second best football program in the ACC. I mean, they are right there on the doorstep. And Dave Doran has done just such a fantastic job since he arrived in Raleigh of building this team to where it is today. And, of course, he's led by Ryan Finley. And if you look at Clemson this season, where have they struggled? Where have the Tigers struggled? It's been against good passing attacks. Kellen Mond threw for 400 yards against this team. Syracuse was able to beat Clemson repeatedly downfield with some vertical passing threat that tested that Clemson secondary. And NC State is going to be able to do the same thing. Ryan Finley may be the best pro prospect quarterback in the country, and he's sitting right there and playing for NC State. Probably the best quarterback that the Wolfpack have had since Mike Glennon. You could even go back further to Russell Wilson and, of course, Phillip Rivers. They've had some great ones. Ryan Finley seems to be fitting that bill. At receiver, they've got Kelvin Harmon, who's averaging 107 yards a game. He only has two touchdowns this season, but 33 catches, averaging 107 yards a game. He has been tremendous. Jacoby Myers, averaging over 7 catches a game. They spread the football around. You've got Amika Amezi, who has 244 yards, averaging 50 yards a game. So they got three receivers essentially averaging 50 yards a game or more. Ryan Finley distributes the football. They air it out. It has been tremendous. They're averaging 26 completed passes a game. Meanwhile, for Clemson, that defense, again, has struggled time and time again against good passing attacks. You talk about the only passing attack they had success against was Wake Forest, and they dominated Wake Forest 63-3 2 weeks ago. Here's the difference. Wake Forest, it was a freshman quarterback. It was Sam Hartman, a true freshman, who, while he has shown some promise, going up against Clemson is a totally different test for a guy like him, and he failed that test early on in his career. Ryan Finley, seasoned veteran, going to be playing on Sundays in less than a year. Totally different type of quarterback that Clemson's facing this weekend, and that's what's going to be the difference, I think. I think NC State can move the football against the Tigers. I think that secondary can be tested. The big question is, can NC State hold up in pass protection? Can they keep Clemson's front four out of the backfield? Because if NC State cannot protect Ryan Finley and Clemson's able to get to the quarterback, all of a sudden this becomes a much different football game. You talk about guys like Austin Bryant, you talk about Christian Wilkins, Dexter Lawrence. Those guys are going to get to Ryan Finley at least at some point. It's a matter of, can they disrupt Ryan Finley enough to force turnovers? Because if NC State loses the football and gives Clemson good opportunities, good field position, the Tigers will capitalize. Trevor Lawrence is continuing to get better, and that's a critical thing here. And Clemson right now, third in the ACC. They play like an SEC team sometimes. Third in the ACC with 20 sacks this season, averaging just about 3.5 sacks a game. That's only behind Miami and Boston College in the conference. Meanwhile, on the flip side, NC State, their defensive line, a lot of issues right now. There's no Bradley Chubb on that defensive line anymore, and it's showing. The Wolfpack only have 13 sacks on the season, averaging about 2.5 a game. That's right in the middle of the pack, towards the bottom of the ACC. And they need to start establishing a better pass rush. Clemson's got a terrific offensive line. They did a great job so far this season of keeping Trevor Lawrence protected. And if Trevor Lawrence has time to throw, you have to imagine that they're going to be picking apart this NC State secondary plenty of times. Right now, Clemson third in the ACC in sacks allowed. But I will say this about NC State. We're talking about the defensive line battles here. North Carolina State and Ryan Finley has been sacked. Not once, but twice. Two times all season long. Only two sacks for Ryan Finley all year long. So you're talking about a Clemson defensive line that is chomping at the bit, third in the ACC in sacks, going against NC State, who easily, by far, allowing the fewest sacks all season. Some of that's on the offensive line. Some of that is on Ryan Finley's ability to get through his progressions quickly, get the ball out. Ultimately, I think NC State's going to make this a game. I think NC State is going to give Clemson a real hard time. The only thing that scares me about this game, the only thing that really worries me, is the idea that Dabo Swinney, while he'll never say it publicly, he wants to beat NC State into the ground after what happened last year when Dave Doran, post-game, accused Clemson of using a laptop on the sideline. The whole cheating deal went down. There was this investigation for a few days. Dabo Swinney got angry. NC State was angry. Turned out it was a whole lot of nothing. Nobody ever found anything. I don't believe that Clemson needs to cheat to beat NC State. So it was a really weird situation. And now you have to know, coaches hold on to those sort of things. Just ask Paul Johnson, who beat Louisville into the ground a few weeks ago after what Brian Van Gorder did to him back at Georgia Southern. So these coaches hold grudges, and while they're not going to talk about them publicly most of the time, they remember, and they'll take it out on the field if they can. And Dabo's a nice guy. Dabo's not the type of guy that's a run-it-up type of guy, but you know he was irritated at what Doran said a year ago, and if Clemson gets ahead by 14-21, I don't see them taking their foot off the gas. I think that Dabo is going to continue to try to push the ball down the field. He's going to try to put his foot on the throat of NC State. He is going to be as aggressive as possible, and I think Clemson's going to be able to do that. The other thing to keep in mind here, North Carolina State's run defense, how can they hold up against Travis Etienne? Right now, the Wolfpack third in the ACC in rushing defense. You talk about the teams they face, however, JMU, Georgia State, Marshall, and UVA in the first four games. In those games, they were giving up less than 3.5 yards a carry. Against Boston College last week, a team with a little bit better rushing attack, although they didn't have A.J. Dillon, they gave up almost 5 yards a carry. So a BC team without A.J. Dillon ran for almost 5 yards. Meanwhile, you're talking about a Clemson team here that is absolutely on fire on the ground. Ever since that Syracuse game, Travis Etienne really taken off, averaging 126 rushing yards. He has 11 touchdowns. Of course, he had that 200-yard performance against Syracuse. He has 6 touchdowns in his last 2 games. Okay, and he's averaging over 10 yards a carry. It is obscene what Travis Etienne is doing. He did it to Syracuse. He did it to Wake. NC State hasn't been tested like this yet this season. While the rushing numbers look great on the surface defensively, they haven't done it against a big-time team like Travis Etienne. So I think that Clemson's going to get the ball moving on the ground as well. I think they rely on Etienne a lot, especially early in the game, get Trevor Lawrence comfortable. Remember, Lawrence has been shaky in some of the more important moments this season. We always think about Texas A&M, but even as they got down against Syracuse, it just wasn't as consistent of a play from him that you would like. And you never know. If NC State stays in the game early, if Clemson's not able to get themselves a cushion, how does Trevor Lawrence respond? I like Travis Etienne to have a big game. I think Clemson ends up putting up close to 35, 40 points in this game. I'm going to say 35-28 the final. I think it's going to be a 35-28 game. I think that NC State stays well inside the number. The only thing that makes me think that Clemson might blow him out is the whole laptop deal. If Dabo really wants to try to run it up on NC State, and he has the chance, he will. But I have yet to see Clemson, outside of the Wake Forest game, really start to assert themselves as a dominant player in the national race. I haven't seen it happen yet. And what this reminds me of with Clemson, as we start to back out a little bit and take a broader view on the Tigers, what the Tigers remind me of right now is they remind me of Florida State back in 2014. And if you remember Florida State that year, that was the year after they won the national championship. And they had Jameis Winston back, their preseason number one. They had all sorts of NFL talent across the roster. And what happened? They continually struggled with subpar competition. They struggled. I mean, you remember the Louisville game was a famous one where Jameis had to bring them all the way back to win. They struggled against teams like Notre Dame. They struggled against Virginia, Miami, Boston College, Florida, Georgia Tech. They won all these games just by the hair on their chin. I mean, they were just scraping by against some decent teams, but some teams that didn't even belong, weren't even bowl eligible at the end of the season. So Florida State was really having a hard time with those teams. And then what happened? Season end, they make the playoff because they were undefeated, because they had played and won a national championship the year before, and they played Oregon and lost by 39. So we get into this habit, I think, as a college football fan base, or even in the media especially, of voting for these teams and perceiving these teams based on what happened a year ago, what happened 2 years ago. And just because Clemson won a national championship 2 years ago, just because they've played for 3 straight playoffs, they've won 3 straight ACC titles, that has no bearing on this season. I mean, that's all well and good. Like, good for Clemson. I think Clemson is the preeminent program in the ACC, hands down. They're one of the best programs in the country right now. Very, very hard to play at the level Clemson's played for the last 4 or 5 seasons. But I don't care what they did last year. I don't care what they did when Kelly Bryant was their quarterback. I don't care what they did when Deshaun Watson was their quarterback. That has no relevance on what they've done over the last month and a half on the field this season. And on the field this season, they've looked like a pretty above-average football team. And above-average is not the standard at Clemson. Above-average doesn't get you into the playoff. Clemson has to, at some point, assert itself and play like a nationally dominant player, like a nationally dominant team. And that's not happening right now. So this is a chance for Clemson to do so. If they don't, if they struggle to get by NC State, okay, look, they're going to run the table, they'll be fine. If they run the table, they'll be fine, I should say. But they need a dominant performance against a ranked team to prove that they belong along the likes of the top five, along the likes of Alabama, LSU, Ohio State. I mean, those teams have had great wins, and Clemson hasn't had one yet. Their best win so far this season is 63-3 over Wake Forest. Does that really jump off the page at you? I mean, great, great game, dominant start to finish. Wake Forest is a plucky little upstart team, but let's be honest. That's not going to seal the deal in the committee room when you're trying to decide between two teams. I know that if Clemson goes undefeated, it doesn't matter. They're going to get in. But if you look at it on paper, you look at the way they've played, there's a lot of teams out there that have played better football than them. I talked about it on the JP Top 5, or Top 10, rather, on the podcast on Monday. Make sure to catch that if you didn't, College Football Country Podcast, because Clemson's not in the top five right now. They don't have a resume that deserves it. And this is their first opportunity to try to prove that they belong in that top five. And if they come out and win convincingly, they cover their 17-point spread, by all means, I'll be happy to move Clemson up closer to that top five, probably in the top five, depending on how everything else shakes out around the country. In reality, Clemson doesn't care about my rankings. All they need to do is keep winning. They'll get in, but just be careful. Just be careful if you're thinking about betting on Clemson or picking Clemson later in the year when they get, if they were to get to the playoff. Don't forget about Florida State. That's a great test case for a team that believed it was so good it could walk out, just show up and win. Florida State in 2014, you also had Ohio State the very next season in 2015. Defending national champions, they returned everybody. People thought this could be one of the greatest teams ever, and they walked out every week and just thought that they didn't need to try. They thought that they could just show up and win, and eventually it caught up to them. They were playing ugly football for a long time, and they had way more talent than everybody else on their team. But you talked about a team that ran the table all the way until they played Michigan State. And what happened? They got beat. They got beat by a Michigan State team that was a good Spartans team. Don't get me wrong. But when they struggled with Northern Illinois and they struggled with Indiana, they struggled with Minnesota looking back at that season. Don't just look on the talent on the team, because you got to go out and earn it. Okay. Otherwise, we'll just hand out national championships and conference championships based on recruiting rankings. You got to go out and play the games, and you got to look good doing it if you want to win a title. So keep that in mind with Clemson. This is an opportunity for them to start to change the narrative with Trevor Lawrence at quarterback. Next up, it's going to be Dabo Swinney, the Clemson coach, joining us. It's going to be me and Nick Wilson. If you don't know Nick, he's my co-host on Wilson and Parcells. So we'll talk to Dabo Swinney, an excellent conversation with the Clemson head coach about the legacy of the Tigers since he took over a decade ago. And also, he looks ahead to that matchup with NC State. Keep it right here on College Football Country. Welcome back to College Football Country. Right now, we are going to welcome on Dabo Swinney to the podcast. And Dabo, this is a recorded interview from Wilson and Parcell. If you miss Wilson and Parcell, it's on every weekday, Monday through Friday, 10 to 2 in the morning on WFNZ in Charlotte. Dabo joined us on Wednesday, and we are going to play back that interview for you right now. Clemson head coach Dabo Swinney.
Wilson and Parcell, a lot to get to in the show, but very excited to have our next guest on. We head out to the Technicom guest line, and we talk with current Clemson head coach, Dabo Swinney. Coach, we just passed the 10-year anniversary of you getting the gig at Clemson. Did you ever in your wildest dreams imagine you'd have the success that you've had the last 10 years?
Absolutely. I actually dreamed a little higher. I wish we came up a little short from what I dreamed about. But we've done all right. But we've still got a lot more work to do and a lot of mountains to climb.
Well, Coach, I'm curious about that. So, not to belabor this, I know we want to get into what you're going on with right now. But when you took over as full-time head coach, what was the vision 10 years ago that you sold on your team, your donors, everybody, that and when do you think the guys realized that vision?
Well, my vision was to build, the model program in college football, to win at an incredibly high level and consistent level on the field, to recruit great young men, to graduate our players, to academically be one of the best. And that's what we've done. This is my 10th season as the head coach, and the last 8 years, we're second winningest team in the country, us and Alabama on the field. But 7 out of the last 8 years, we're top 10 academically, us, Duke, Northwestern, and Stanford. So, I think that was the vision. And as far as, when I felt like we were making progress. I mean, we, right out of the gate, we won the division the first year and played for the championship, got beat. But probably my second year, and that was of my nine seasons, that was our worst season on the scoreboard, and we only won six games. But that was really the season that I felt like our culture was kind of taking root, and the guys were really buying in and how they were competing. I mean, we lost five games by 6 points or less. We lost two of them in overtime, one of them to Auburn, who won the national championship that year. And we, I just, you know, I was like, man, we are just really on the right track here. And as far as what was happening in our locker room and the buy-in from our guys. But, you know, the main thing, everything comes down to the people involved. And we've been very committed to our formula as far as how we recruit, who we recruit. You know, you got to be a good player, but that's the bare minimum. And there's so much more that we're looking for here at Clemson. And we've stuck to that, especially as we've established our program and built our foundation. So it's been a lot of fun. It's crazy that it's been, you know, 10 years since I was named interim. Man, we got a lot more work to do. And I'm proud of what we've accomplished. I'm proud of all the young men who've come through our program. Just eyes forward on what's coming next.
You know, Coach Swinney, you guys have several big games coming up. Of course, NC State this weekend. But look, you guys are in the middle of an unbeaten run right now. And I'll be honest, it doesn't matter how much talent you got on the roster. It's hard to avoid those upsets. And you guys in the last 2 years, you fell victim to those games, you know, three touchdown favorites and loss. And you were able to bounce back from that and still make that run to the college football playoff. What have you learned from those two games over the last few seasons? And how are you trying to approach it with this team to try to avoid that same fate in the second half of this season?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we've lost, I think we're like 48-4 in our last 52 games. So, you know, we haven't lost many games. But I think the biggest thing is anybody can beat you. Anybody can beat you. That we lost to a Pitt team that there's a formula for success and a plan to win. And when you don't do a good job with those things, certain things like turnover margin and big plays and big plays in special teams and penalties and all that, anybody can beat anybody. And, you know, the common denominator in at least the last – we've only lost one game the last 2 years. The common denominator has been actually the last 3 years. I think we lost the national championship in 15 and then lost to Pitt in 16 and Syracuse in 17. Common denominators, turnovers, and you know, not doing a good job with some of the things that you control. And then, you know, those teams just played better than us on that day. And, you know, we're going to get everybody's best shot. That's just the way it is. That comes with where we are as a program. So I think we do everything we can to make every game the biggest game of the year. That's the mindset that we try to create. And, unfortunately, we're 48-4. We hadn't won every one of them, but we've won a lot. But when we have lost one, I think the biggest thing is how do you respond? I mean, yeah, we want to go undefeated, and I don't think there's been a 15-0 team ever. We'd certainly love to be that team, but you know what? You can't let one game derail or define your whole season. You know, fans do that, but that can't be your focus. I mean, if you put everything you got into it, and you know, hey, if it doesn't go well and you have a bad day and you get beat, you got to move on. And you come back and you respond. You don't let that loss cost you two or three more. And you see that all the time all across college football. Teams are having great years, then they lose a game, and it's like the air goes completely out, and then they lose two or three more. You know, I just think our culture of our program is what we lean on to prepare every single week. And it's never easy. But we got good people that we have to play. And I mean, we're playing an undefeated team this week. And, you know, if they beat us, I don't think it's an upset. I think they're a really good team. And that they probably just outplayed us. But we're going to do everything we can to just try to do our very best and find a way to win the game.
Clemson head coach Dabo Swinney joining us in the Technicom guest line. So, Coach, I've talked with a few coaches or managers about this where from year to year, you're never quite sure how the pieces are going to fit together chemistry-wise, but every coach I've ever talked to about the subject of a chemistry makeup has said that at some point they looked at their team, they looked at the way they play together, the chemistry in the locker room, and said, this is a team that can win a championship or at least compete for one. For you, from your standpoint, having won a national championship, having won 4 ACC titles, there are 6 Atlantic Division titles as well, when do you know? Is there a certain time in the year when you know that you have a playoff caliber team or a team that can really at least put themselves into that conversation?
Yeah, I think I don't think there's a specific date on the calendar that you can say, okay, man, I'll know by April, you know, or I'll know by August. Or I think it's different every year. I think every team is different. Every team has its own journey and challenges. And I will say this, I think that two of the most underrated things that people don't often talk about are chemistry and leadership. Those are two huge, huge pieces to the puzzle that, you know, kind of can slide under the radar with a lot of people. They just look at the surface and look at the talent or the experience or whatever. But the chemistry and the leadership is so critical. And it's been different times for me, you know. I mean, it's been I've come out of spring practice before many times, and I'm like, you know what, this team right here, this team's got a chance to compete for the league. And then there's been other times, for example, last year, man, we were completely starting over. We had lost like 85% of our offense, and we were totally starting over on offense. And when I came out of spring training last year, we were a big-time work in progress. We had so many question marks, and, you know, I wouldn't have said, hey, we're going to – I think we can go be a playoff team. But, you know, as that season kind of wore on, and I would say probably early September, mid-September, I started to see the team come together and develop, and I saw some things on the field that I needed to see. And I was like, you know what? Hey, we might have a shot here to win this league again, and even though we're kind of a different team from the national championship team the year before. And we did. We went all the way to the playoff and – you know, got beat there in the semis, but every team's different. It really is. But this team here, this is a team for sure that I felt like coming out of spring practice, coming out of mat drills, to be honest with you, back in February, I felt like that this team had the type of leadership and focus. And I think, you know, the chemistry is still something that you develop as you go through the spring and summer. But I really felt like the competitive depth that we were going to have, and the experience, competitive depth, that this would be a team that would have a chance to make a run. And, you know, we're 6 games in. We're still a work in progress. But I think we've grown our team a lot in the first half. I think we've kind of solidified some guys and solidified our depth. We're battle-tested. We've had to handle some adversity and things like that. So I think we're in a good spot going into the second half, and we're definitely – you know, there's 5 Power 5 teams that are undefeated, and 3 of our games have already been on the road. So I think we're a team that has a legitimate shot. But, man, you got to put the work in. There's no shortcut. I mean, you got to put the work in Monday through Friday. I mean, everybody wants to be successful on Saturday, but it's all about, you know, what you do today. You know, Tuesday, Wednesday practice, man, just absolutely loving the preparation part of it. The best teams I've been a part of, that's the way they were. And this team, I think, is serious about, you know, trying to be the best version of themselves. And we can live whatever result we get with that type of mindset.
You know, Coach, one of the best things I think anyone can say about your program now is the way you've elevated the bar for Clemson football. And now the bar is national championships, college football playoff appearances, winning the ACC. That's the expectation, at least from the outside, when you talk about Clemson football. And I think it goes without saying, at least from my point of view, when you guys named Trevor the guy less than a month ago, I think you knew what you had in Trevor, and you knew you had a guy who you think can eventually win titles for you. What does Trevor have to do between now and, let's say, December to win not only an ACC title, but to get you back to winning a national championship or at least competing for one?
He's just got to be a good decision maker. He's make the plays that are there. He doesn't have to try to force things, continue to prepare every single day with great purpose and attention to detail. He's a detail-oriented young player. He's very wise beyond his years, has a great understanding of what we do. He has a great understanding of defense, but just playing within the system, and understanding that it will work for him if he'll just, not force things. And then I think another thing with him is continuing to grow as far as making plays with his legs, because this kid can run. A lot of people don't really know that about him, but he can move, and he's very confident in the pocket. But there's some times where, we need him to create some scrambles and maybe not sit in that pocket quite so long. And that just comes with playing time and then just taking care of the ball. We've had a couple of kind of silly turnovers, if you will, that we need to eliminate. But that's really it. I mean, he's got everything that you could ever want in a quarterback. I mean, he's poised. He's a leader. He's confident. He's got a beautiful arm and just a great mind to go with it. So I'm excited about where he is, and I'm excited about his future. And then we got to support him. All those people around him have to do a great job of helping him be successful.
Clemson head coach Dabo Swinney joining us here. I know you've got the NC State game coming up this weekend. Homecoming, it's your annual breast cancer awareness game, and I know your foundation, Dabo's All In Team Foundation, it works heavily in the areas of breast cancer awareness, detection, and treatment. So there's a lot going into this game on top of it being maybe your best matchup on the schedule here. So just kind of trying to pick your brain here. What do you think Clemson has to do to get out of this game with a win?
Well, first of all, we need to win that margin, that turnover margin. I mean, this is not an offense that you want to give a short field. They're very – very, very well coached on both sides of the ball. Schematically, I think they do as good a job as anybody we play as far as positioning their players to be successful and taking advantage of what you do, of what our defense does, what our offense does. I mean, I just think they do a great job. But we got to affect this quarterback. I mean, he is a pro. This kid will be drafted pretty high. He's very accurate. He's got great knowledge. He sees it. And he is a guy that, he doesn't really get is probably credit for running. They don't run him a lot, but he creates a lot of scrambles. And whether he's going to his left or his right, he is dangerous and very accurate with the football on the move. So we've got to contain him, affect him, but you have no chance to beat NC State if you can't win in the trenches. I mean, you have to stop their run game, and then vice versa for us. We've been able to run the football on everybody, and I think that is critical in this game to allow us to create some things in the passing game, through being able to run the football. And last year, I thought we won the special teams battle. I mean, the difference in the game was a punt return for a touchdown, but I think it's the same things every year with this team. It's going to come down to execution and, winning in the trenches and something in special teams and somebody winning that turnover margin and us having more big plays than they have, not having the big play bust. Make them have to go the distance. Don't give them short fields. If they make a big play, then it's a competitive big play. Their guy just made a play. Those are things that are football you can live with, but no uncompetitive big plays where we miss a line or something like that and the guy's running wide open, because this quarterback, he'll make you pay. So it's going to be a lot of factors that will go into the game, but But those are the things off the top of my head that I would say will be critical.
You know, Dabir, we'll let you go on this. You know, you've been around so many talented running backs at Clemson. You go back to James Davis and C.J. Spiller and, of course, Andre Ellington, Wayne Gallman. I mean, the long list of guys you've had in that backfield. I don't know any of them better than Travis Etienne you got right now. I mean, that kid is running the ball so well. How does he compare to some of those guys you've had in the past? And just speak a little praise on the kid and the job he's done so far this year.
Yeah, he kind of stands on his own. He's really special. I mean, he's unique. He's kind of a combination of a lot of those guys, but he's got that power of a Gallman and a James Davis, if you will. But he's got that just electric, game-changing speed and the ability to just leave the defense like a Spiller. I mean, so there's just he's powerful. He's gotten really built his body, done a great job with that. His lower body, especially, he's very strong running between the tackles. He gets a lot of yards after contact. If you really study him, he breaks a ton of tackles. Just really proud of him. He's a great young man. He's a guy that is still growing into the passing game part of it. But I tell you what, man, you hand him that ball, good things happen more times than not. I mean, sometimes they'll have somebody there unblocked, but he's just better. So he's one of those guys that covers up a lot of mistakes along the way. And all those great ones I've been around, that's the one common characteristic that they have. They make some plays that aren't necessarily there, but they're just gifted that way, and E.T. is certainly one of them.
Well, Coach, we really do appreciate your time. Great stuff from you. And again, thank you for not just joining us, but also all that wonderful stuff you do and your foundation does, Dabo's All-In Team Foundation, in the area of breast cancer awareness, detection, and treatment. That's a great cause, and great to see you using your powers for good. Appreciate it.
I appreciate it. I think there's like 41,000 women that'll die this year with breast cancer. And just to put that in perspective, there'll be about, 82,000 people at the stadium to watch us play this weekend. So just kind of a good visual right there. I mean, it's something we're passionate about, and, appreciate the university. And we partner up and pick a game every year. And this is just kind of the way it worked out. And so it'll be a great day. Hopefully we can find a way to win, but no matter what, we're going to help win this battle against breast cancer.
Excellent stuff, Coach. Thanks again.
You got it. Thank you.
All right, guys, that was Dabo Swinney. Hope you enjoyed that interview. Coming up next, it is Chris Felica, the Bear, from College Game Day. He'll join me to make picks for the weekend, give you the best bets to try to win a little money, a little cash, a little Skrilla on Saturday in college football. Keep it right here on College Football Country. Back by popular demand, Chris the Bear Felica to the podcast. Chris, you are the most recurring guest I've had. You, Todd Furman, Peter Burns, you guys all kind of battling it out for the most frequent guest, but I think you've taken the lead right now, so you have that to fall back on, if nothing else.
That's some good company. I appreciate that.
No doubt about it. So, we've got here, I think I've got 6 or 7 games I'd like you to pick. And you guys are obviously in Pullman this weekend for College Game Day. Awesome story, you guys getting out there for the first time ever. And I want to start there. I want to talk Oregon, Washington State. Washington State, a 3-point favorite in this game. Now, Oregon is the last chance the Pac-12 realistically has at the college football playoff. The Ducks being an underdog here on the road, I found this note interesting, Baron. This probably isn't news to you, but Washington State has covered 8 straight games at home. They're the only Power 5 team in the country that's covered every game this season. And Oregon is only 2-4 against the spread. Now, they started out 0-4. They've covered each of their last 2. So they're sort of turning the corner, I guess you could say. What do you see in this game? Cougars at home, favored by 3. Do you think they get it done?
And the Ducks, if you go back over a longer period of time, they're 3-9 against the number as an underdog. But I think if you look at last week beating UW as a dog, really should have won that game against Stafford. They completely gave that game away, inexcusable loss. But I like the fact that Washington State had the week off last week. While Oregon was playing an emotional game against their biggest rival, Washington State was off. They had a week to prep for Oregon. I was a little down on Washington State entering the year. I was a little down on Oregon as well, especially Wazoo, because I thought the loss of Alex Grinch was really going to affect that defense. But Tracy Clays has done a really good job. I think with a week off, I kind of like the Cougs at home Saturday.
You know, they like this spot. I mean, what was it, a year ago, USC walked into Pullman and walked out a loser too. So, I mean, this is something that the Washington State, they love being in this role. I feel like this is a perfect spot for Mike Leach. I love what Oregon's doing. And, I mean, what do you think? If Oregon loses, I mean, the Pac-12 is completely done, right?
Yeah. I would agree with that. I mean, I think Oregon, it's funny, if you want to talk about one-loss teams, I'm sure Georgia and Texas and Oklahoma and LSU would disagree, but you could make a case that Oregon might not be the best one-loss team, but they're certainly the one-loss team that's closest to being undefeated, that's for sure.
No, no doubt about it. Unbelievable the way they went down a couple weeks ago to Stanford. So we'll keep it in the Pac-12. We'll stay on the West Coast here. Colorado at Washington. This is one of the games I really like, and it makes me nervous when I see a line that seems way too big because the Buffaloes are a good football team. Yes, they got through a light schedule early on, finally got their comeuppance a week ago against USC, but they're playing a Washington team that is a 16.5-point favorite at home. And here's why I like Colorado, Bear, and tell me what you think about this. Washington is a veteran team that all they wanted to do for the last 2 years is get back to that playoff, get back to where they were 2 years ago. Jake Browning, Miles Gaskin, those guys had a taste of it 2 years ago. They got housed by Alabama. Now that that dream is over, after losing last week to Oregon, they, to me, seem prime for a second-half letdown. I wonder how much this team feels like they have left to play for because they were so ready to win the Pac-12 and get back to the playoff. And you saw the despair on the faces of guys like Browning last week. I'm nervous that they're going to have a hangover, and I think Colorado is eager to bounce back and get a big win and try to stay ahead in the Pac-12 South.
Yeah, I could see Colorado hanging around in this one as well. And you bring up a good point. Last year, after that loss to Stanford, I think you saw Washington struggle a little bit. They really struggled in a game at home against Utah that they could have won. And I could easily see this be a situation for Washington where they just kind of sleepwalk through the rest of the regular season until the Apple Cup, where they'll probably be not only a lot of state a lot of state pride on the line, but pride within that program and the rivalry as well. So, yeah, I could see Colorado being the right side. I know UW has totally dominated the series, but I think there might be something more for Colorado to prove that the start wasn't a fluke, and Chennault is a fantastic wide receiver. So if he can make a player or two, they might not need many points. If they score 14, they'll probably cover this game.
Well, and I like that you said that too, Bear, because I expect a low-scoring game. Here's another number. The under is 6-1. In each of these teams' last seven games, both of them are 6-1 to the under in their last seven. So these are two teams that have pretty good defenses, play low-scoring, typical games, coming under that number. Do you imagine, I guess it sounds by what you just said, you imagine this one's a pretty low-scoring game too?
Yeah, I would say somewhere along the lines like 30 to 14 or something like in that range as well.
Yep, and the over-under 50 in that one. All right, so yep. Now let's start heading our way towards the East Coast. We'll stop in the Midwest, and we'll talk about Michigan at Michigan State, another big ranked game. Wolverines, 7-point favorites on the road in East Lansing. Sparty got a big win last week. Michigan State has covered 10 of the last 11 against the Wolverines. Did they make it 11 of 12, or does Michigan cover the touchdown on the road?
And I believe it's 10 straight, if I'm not mistaken.
You might be right.
With like three outright wins as an underdog. Everyone seems to be on the Michigan bandwagon now, and I'm not so sure. They're not going to be able to run the ball against Michigan State's front. Is Shea Patterson going to be able to create on his own? Will he be able to – do they get Tariq Black back in the lineup? That won't certainly help him. Before last week's game, I thought you could have made the argument that that Michigan State was the most disappointing team in the country with everything they had coming back and losing to Arizona State, looking ugly against Central Michigan, and losing that game to Northwestern at home as a double-digit favorite. But they can kind of rewrite the course of their season with the win on Saturday. You got to remember, too, with Michigan, the two times we've seen them away from home, they lost at Notre Dame. They were very fortunate to come back from a double-digit deficit to win at Northwestern. So while people are all of a sudden excited about the Wolverines, I'd be careful and I'd lean towards, even though the Spartans are a little bit of a trendy type home dog, I'd lean towards taking Michigan State and the points in this rally, because I think there's a good chance L.J. Scott will come back to the lineup on Saturday, and that will certainly help Michigan State.
There's a lot of reasons here to imagine this is going to be a close game. Two great defenses. Of course, Michigan State in a rivalry game at home, being that 7-point underdog. To me, this feels like a Michigan win, but a Michigan State cover. Like, I could see the Wolverines winning this game by 3-4 points and not covering that 7, but I do think they ultimately win. The amazing thing about Michigan State's defense is, yes, they were one of the most disappointing teams through the first 5 or 6 weeks, but before last week's game against Penn State, Michigan State was giving up, I think, like 1.3 yards a carry in their first 5 games.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this rush defense is dominant. Penn State kind of broke them a little bit, but still a great and elite rushing defense. Two great defenses. To me, I think this is a low-scoring game, and in that sense, I think Michigan wins a tight one. I don't have a great feel either way. If I had to pick one, I would say Michigan State covers, but I do think Michigan wins outright. And they're another one that if Michigan loses, all of a sudden the Big Ten is down to one team in the playoff race, really. Everybody else is going to have multiple losses. So it's an interesting game for sure. Sticking around that part of the country, let's go down to the SEC, though, and talk about Mississippi State at LSU. LSU, who is as hot as anybody in the country right now. I know they lost 2 weeks ago to Florida, but that win over Georgia is fresh in everyone's minds. They've covered 9 of the last 10 against SEC opponents, but they are less than a touchdown favorite against a team that I can't figure out in Mississippi State. That game's in Baton Rouge. LSU, again, -6.5. What are your thoughts there?
Well, you look at Mississippi State, they're pretty much incapable of throwing the football. But I do think they're going to present some problems for LSU's offensive line. I think Sweat and Simmons are going to be able to get some favorable matchups on that front and make life a little bit difficult for Joe Burrow. But while LSU has certainly got to give them credit for winning those games, they're still a really inefficient offense. They've done just enough, make a play here or there, to kind of offset 6 or 7 or 8 average to ineffective plays. If you look at LSU this season as well, the previous 2 times they won a game outright as an underdog, next week they came back a little flat. Now they faced Southeast Louisiana, who they were going to win the game, but they didn't cover a huge number. The week after they beat Auburn, they faced Louisiana Tech. Just ho-hum effort, did enough to win the game. Now they face a pretty good Mississippi State defense, and maybe with the week off, Joe Moorhead has figured some things out offensively to get Nick Fitzgerald in some more favorable situations and just kind of said, hey, don't be afraid to run the ball and trust our defense. I could see that, like we're talking about Michigan State, being a low-scoring type game where the favorite wins but the underdog covers. I could very easily see that scenario playing out in Baton Rouge, like a 23-20, 20-17 type game in favor of LSU.
Are you buying into the idea that LSU could actually keep up with Alabama, or is this just something that we're trying to – yeah, okay.
No.
I'm glad you're a smarter guy than that. I was just making sure.
That's a treetop level, like, hot take, quick narrative that LSU – Good luck trying to slow that offense down. Maybe two will be hurt and something will happen and start turning the ball over uncharacteristically, but I can't see LSU keeping up with them.
I can't either. Can you explain what happened last week with that Georgia game? I mean, how did LSU run Georgia out of the building?
Well, we did talk about before on the show on Saturday morning that we had some questions about Georgia. The injuries on the offensive line were a factor. Jake Fromm, his when he's pressured, he's really been rattled. It was really a 2018 version of what happened at Jordan Hare last year. Fromm was rattled. He couldn't stop the Auburn running game. Crowd got involved, and it just kind of snowballed from there. So it'll be interesting to see if they get Cleveland back on the offensive line and if that seems to help. I still think that they're going to have to figure that quarterback thing out because we're throwing Justin Fields in there for a series here or there. I don't know if it's disrupting continuity or whatever, but it's going to be hard, I think, to keep both guys happy. And ultimately, Kirby's going to have to go with feel as to what's going to give them the best chance to win.
Yep, he's one of a few schools that's going through that right now. A couple more before you bear. SEC as well. Alabama is favored by 29 at Tennessee. The Crimson Tide 2-6 in their last SEC games, conference games against the spread. Meanwhile, Tennessee 5-2 against the number in their last seven against teams with a winning record. I thought that was just an interesting note because, you know, Tennessee's been down, but at least when they've played some of the better teams, they've had a tendency lately to stay within the number. This is a big one, Alabama 29. That's the margin they won by a week ago against Missouri. How do you see this one shaking out in Knoxville?
And if you look at the five games that Alabama has played under Nick Saban as the number one ranked team in the country, they've won four of those games by 30 points. So the trend under Nick Saban is really not to let up. And you got the overblown narrative, too, about Nick Saban 14-0 against his former assistants. There's a reason he's 14-0 against his former assistants, because his former assistants are at a school that they hired him away from because they're down and they're clearly not at talent level yet. But I would say I would lay the points if I had to. I mean, if you take away that one play last week where they marked two and slide down like before the first down marker and they had a punt, they still wouldn't have punted in what the last 4 weeks. It's just insane how efficient and how good that offense is. And you know, I don't want to read too much into this, but I think then I read that Butch Jones is going to be making the trip up. One of the analysts making the trip up. It almost feels like Nick is saying, Butch, come on up and watch the 50-0 beatdown we're about to put on your former team in the bench.
Oh, that's just the kind of thing that evil Nick Saban would do. I'm not feeling one way or the other. 29 is just such a scary number when you're right out there just outside of four touchdowns. Obviously, 28, a key number. Alabama has had a tendency. I think it's overblown. Tell me what you think about this. The idea that Alabama's defense is vulnerable, it may not be quite the same defense they've had 4 or 5 years ago. But at the same time, a lot of the points that the Tide are giving up is third and fourth quarter points when they're rotating in backup guys. Like, I just don't understand this idea that, well, Alabama's defense is weak. Well, yeah, maybe their backup defense is weak, but when it's mattered and when they've played their first 22, it hasn't even been a contest.
Yeah, there's a reason why they're, 6-1, whatever it is, against it ever in first half. Line.
Yep.
They're blowing people out. You're able to get, you're giving up 14 late points against Louisiana Lafayette in Arkansas when the game is in doubt. So yeah, I wouldn't. I mean, there's a you can drill down efficiency metrics to see what they've done with and outside of garbage time. So yeah, I have no concern about Jared Garantano and Tennessee really putting up a lot of points on them.
Yeah, a couple quick ones here in the ACC. UVA at Duke. Now Virginia is a 7-point underdog, but man, the Cavaliers playing some good football right now, making me a little bit nervous as a Hokie about that game at the end of the season. I don't want to talk about it right now. I don't want to address it. I don't want to think about it. I'm not going to talk about it for another month, okay? We're not going to go down this road. But I do want to know, what do you think about UVA and Duke? Because I see a Duke team. I don't know how much you watched the Duke-Virginia Tech game a couple weeks ago, but the only loss the Blue Devils had this year, there was two or three plays in that game where Daniel Jones had receivers open past the Virginia Tech secondary, ball bounces off the fingertips of a Duke receiver. If those passes are completed, he connects on those, Duke scores a couple touchdowns. That's an entirely different game. I actually thought Duke played much better than the final score indicated. And if you take away that Tech game, they played really good football this season. So 7-point favorite against a hot Virginia team. What do you see here, Cavaliers going on the road into Durham?
If you look at Duke historically, I think the last 12 games they've been a favorite an ACC play. I think there's something like 2-10 against the number with like six outright losses. So they are the underdog of all underdogs. Cut's got the underdog thing mastered down. Now he has to figure out a way to win when they're expected to. And look, Virginia's defense is not bad. I mean, I know Miami had a ton of offensive problems last week. It's funny seeing Miami message boards. Miami, they blowing up. All right. If you didn't expect that to happen last week, I don't know what team and what turnaround you've been watching lately. That had underdog upset alert written all over it at UAB last week, coming off the win against Florida State. So while I was surprised they did lose, I wasn't surprised that they it was ultimately going to be close. Virginia's got a little bit of confidence defensively now, and if Jones isn't hot, they could certainly back that up with a good performance. The trend does say back Virginia here, and I might have to stay with it.
Yeah, I think this is a close one too.
Another one of those favorite wins, close games, take the dog, and see where you are.
See, this is what I'm hearing here, Bear, is I'm hearing a lot of teasers. I'm hearing a lot of, let's just tease it up to 14 and just take the underdog and feel good.
that's been like what the story of the NFL this year, right? I know I know on Visa, Gil Alexander has been going through every week, like, teasers both ways in the NFL has been like a goldmine, and they've wound up upping the juice on a lot of teasers because they're getting beat so bad.
Wow, yeah, that's fascinating. So last game here, the biggest game in my turf here, NC State and Clemson on the road. That line has now moved out, as I'm recording this on Thursday, to 17.5. Clemson giving up 17.5 against NC State. The Wolfpack are 5-1 against the number in the last six meetings between these two. Last 2 years, it's come down to a touchdown. Of course, 2 years ago, NC State walked into Death Valley and should have won that game, missed a field goal, lost in overtime. The Wolfpack are eager for an upset here. They're undefeated against a cupcake schedule. Do you think that Clemson can cover this gargantuan number, 17.5?
I do. I think the reports of like the demise of Clemson is greatly exaggerated. I think they've been a little bit of a subject of a little bit too much nitpicking going on. You look at their defensive numbers; they're still number one in the country in defensive efficiency. They're still pressuring the quarterback, I think, at a higher rate than anybody at the, in the country. And this is a different NC State team than the one that nearly went into Death Valley a couple years ago and won, and the one that last year hung around against Clemson as well. I think the Clemson playoff drive begins now. I think that game against Wake Forest was a good thing for them, a huge blowout win. And I don't think people national here have caught on to what Travis Etienne has done the last four games. He's averaging like 11 yards a carry over the last four games with 9 touchdowns. If you go back historically as well, you hit on that big number. If you go back to 94, the last 8 times you've had a team that's 5-0 or better on the road as an underdog of more than 14 points, none of the last 8 teams in that situation have wound up covering. They've all been blowouts. So, again, that goes along with you. Like, wow, what a big number. It's really tempting to take. I'd be careful. If I were to play this game, I would be more apt to lay the 17 than I would the 17.5 that I would take NC State. However, I will say this, if there's anybody out there that maybe before the season played Clemson to make the college football playoff, you're in a good position now because you could put a little bit of a money line wager on NC State because if the Wolfpack were to win the game outright, you'd have that money line play going, and then there's still a chance potentially Clemson can wind up winning the ACC and maybe get in, and maybe NC State winds up running the table and gets the ACC championship game. But how funny is it, by the way, that NC State schedules that game with East Carolina on December 1st. Hey, you know what? We won't be busy on December 1st. We can schedule a Saturday night to be like, about that game on December 1st, we might need to do something. How big of a check do you want?
I know. Well, I know one team that East Carolina won't call if that game gets canceled. That's Virginia Tech. There's still a little bad blood going on right there. So maybe South Carolina can go find somebody else to play. Go play South Carolina. They need a game, but they certainly won't be playing in the SEC championship game. Love the nuggets from you, Bear. That was awesome. Fantastic stuff. And look forward to talking to you soon, man. It's as excellent as always.
Absolutely, guys. Good stuff. We'll absolutely do it again sometime.